Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on the Brian Lehrer Show, Eric Holder testifies that banks are not too big to jail after he says they are. It's Heidi Moore on Wall Street scandals hiding in plain sight. Heidi Moore in just about a minute. Also today, we continue our series on the legalization of marijuana in parts of the U.S. Today, the science of medical and recreational marijuana, plus the ethics of cloning after yesterday's scientific breakthrough on cloning stem cells. Did you hear about that? And we continue our series with the New York Times obituary editor, Bill McDonald, today. We'll see whose interesting life they remember in today's edition. And we'll tell you about the Four Freedoms Park on Roosevelt Island and play an excerpt from FDR's Four Freedoms speech from 1941. All of that coming up in about 1 minute. Just a quick ask first. It's day three of our spring membership drive. Please help us pay the bills and to bring you meaningful independent media. And this morning we have a really fun extra incentive. Anyone who pledges by noon today is automatically entered in a contest for a $4,000 Apple product shopping spree at TechServe on West 23rd Street. $4,000 worth of credit toward iPads, iPods, iThis's and iThats, all the Apple stuff and their accessories. One of you will win this $4,000 TechServe shopping spree. If you already pledged this drive or you're a sustaining member, your name is already in, and you don't have to pledge to enter, but of course we hope you will at 1-888-376-WNYC, 1-888-376-9692, or pledge online at WNYC.org. And the shopping spree contest closes at noon, so do it now, and thanks everybody for supporting the station. All right, enough for the moment with Washington scandal talk. That stench wafting your way from lower Manhattan is the scandals pervading Wall Street, hiding in plain sight behind Benghazi and the IRS and everything, including whether the big investment banks are too big to jail. But fear not, because Heidi Moore, business and finance editor for The Guardian USA, is here to enlighten us on what's happening behind the gilded doors. Hi, Heidi. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
So while Attorney General Eric Holder is on the hot seat for the IRS and snooping on the AP, hardly making news this morning is his testimony yesterday before the House Judiciary Committee on banks that are not just too big to fail, but too big to jail. He promised that they are not. And we'll play this clip in a minute. But why was this testimony necessary in the first place?
Well, a couple of months ago, he had testified that it was very hard to bring prosecutions against banks, that, you know, it's hard to prove that they did anything wrong and that, you know, innocent people can be hurt. When you prosecute a bank, it could hurt the financial system. And naturally, that set off a firestorm, including criticism from Elizabeth Warren, who is, you know, a well-known activist and lawmaker who, you know, has really taken on the banks.
So Eric Holder, tail between legs, after saying a few months ago that big banks are too big to jail. This runs 1 minute.
Let me make something real clear right away. I made a statement, I guess, in a Senate hearing that I think has been misconstrued. I said it was difficult at times to bring cases against large financial institutions because the potential consequences that they would have on the financial system. It's very clear that there is no bank, there's no institution, there's no individual who cannot be investigated and prosecuted by the United States Department of Justice. As I indicated in my opening statement, we have brought thousands of financially based cases over the course of the last 4.5 years. Now, there are a number of factors that we have to take into consideration to make sure, or to take into consideration as we decide who we're going to prosecute. Innocent people can be impacted by a prosecution brought of a financial institution or any corporation. But let me be very, very, very clear. Banks are not too big to jail.
So banks are not too big to jail. And he says those words, but it's now 4.5 years after the financial crisis with all its shady dealing. And still no one in any meaningful position actually has gone to jail for it, have they? So are there current Justice Department investigations that Holder was referring to?
Well, yeah, they exist. But, you know, what he didn't mention is that, you know, he mentioned thousands of financially based cases have been brought over the past 4 years by the Justice Department. What he didn't mention is that financial prosecutions are at a 20-year low. So, you know, they're not really getting very far on financial prosecutions. And it's a question whether it's even, you know, any kind of priority for them. So if you listen carefully, if you sort of read between the lines of what he was saying, he really was still sticking to his old argument. I mean, he was saying, if we can prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. And of course, we know when it comes to financial companies, it's very difficult to prove things beyond a reasonable doubt because they have control of the information. They can always argue that something was a matter of judgment rather than, you know, of ethics or of duty. And that's what they've been doing over time. So that's one way that he kind of, you know, squirmed out of really taking responsibility. And then another way was that he still mentioned that innocent people can be impacted by the prosecution of financial firms, which is kind of ridiculous. We let Lehman Brothers fail, and there were innocent people impacted by that. Lots of, you know, employees who are making $30,000 a year, $40,000 a year, who lost their nest eggs. And that was a government decision. And, you know, no one really looks back on that in the government and says we shouldn't have let Lehman Brothers fail.
And that was just to fail in the marketplace. To jail means there would have been criminal wrongdoing. And it's very hard, I would imagine, or should be very hard, for the government to look at criminal activity, if they really find criminal activity on the part of a bank, and say, well, this is going to be challenging for the economy, so we don't want to go after the bad guys. Because then it's challenging to the future economy in another way.
Right. And the question is it even challenging to the economy? It's really only challenging to the stock prices of the banks. And that is not
right.
The economy, right? The economy
right.
has many other, you know, issues. But this is, you know, it's very difficult to bring these prosecutions. He is right about that. And it takes a lot of work. And you can see why the DOJ might just want to avoid it just as a matter of resources. But then, of course, you know, they come up with these other reasons that are really hard to buy.
And certainly Elizabeth Warren, among others, would argue that it's healthy for the economy in the long run for criminal wrongdoings by the big banks and the financial system to be brought to justice if they need to be brought to justice. So that's too big to jail. Now there is a too big to fail debate taking place in D.C. as well. I see in today's New York Times a headline that says big banks get break in rules to limit derivatives risk. Does this mean they're watering down Dodd-Frank?
Yes, and I appreciate the surprise that you've put into your voice because that's the only thing that is, you know, that has been unsurprising over the past 4 years that Dodd-Frank has been watered down. So basically what they did was they gave banks some concessions. The idea is these swaps rules govern derivatives. And, of course, most regular people don't know what derivatives are, which is fine because most people on Wall Street don't know what derivatives are. But they're these very complex, you know, financial instruments. And the idea after the financial crisis was that we would regulate them and create more transparency. And their regulator, the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, probably had the best claim of any regulator in the United States to actually try to push forward, you know, true regulation and oversight of the derivatives industry. Unfortunately, they've only gotten halfway. Basically, what they did was they conceded that banks don't have to have as much transparency on the prices that they're looking for some of these derivatives, which means that they can still, you know, keep a lot of that world opaque. They can still make deals over the phone where it's kind of hard to track them. You know, this is kind of predictable because we've seen that as a trend throughout financial reform, that whatever is proposed years and years and years later ends up getting watered down or eliminated altogether. The CFTC has made more progress than almost any other regulator, but, you know, this is still kind of a poor showing.
And it was those opaque derivatives, credit default swaps, collateralized debt obligations, things like that, that people remember from 2008, when the whole financial system shuttered, that was supposed to be dealt with, right? So if they're not being really dealt with, at least to the degree of making them more transparent, why? Is it just that the banks have that much lobbying clout?
Yeah. That's basically it. The banks have a lot of lobbying clout. And then there are also things about the nature of derivatives that make them hard to regulate, which is they're not like stocks or bonds. You know, a lot of stocks are basically the same kind of thing. You can look on the stock exchange and you can see, you know, all stocks, and they all represent kind of, you know, similar values of the companies that they're worth. But when you look at derivatives, they're actually more like individual contracts. So it's like comparing your insurance contract or your health care coverage to other people's health care coverage, right? There are a lot of nuances, and there are a lot of different things that are created for each company. And so that makes oversight much harder. You know, they're very much done on a one-to-one basis.
Heidi Moore, business and finance editor for The Guardian USA. Next issue, JPMorgan Chase chairman and CEO Jamie Dimon may have his power severely reduced by shareholders. That shareholder vote is now underway. But this morning's news is that the company can see the vote as it comes in, but shareholders themselves can't. You tweeted one word on that today, outrageous. Can you explain what's happening?
Yeah, it is absolutely outrageous. You know, one of the things is that J.P. Morgan feels really beleaguered by this attempt to separate the roles of Jamie Dimon, who has been up until now an incredibly successful CEO and chairman. And the chairman title basically means that he gets to, you know, run the board meetings, which happen, you know, a few times every year. And as the chairman and the CEO, not only does he get to run the company, but he gets to influence the board. And a lot of shareholders have been saying perhaps he has too much influence, and they want to break it up. They don't want him to be chairman anymore. They want maybe somebody else to run the board meetings so that Jamie Dimon doesn't have as much clout. And this has been kind of an issue in corporate governance for years and years. It happened to Lloyd Blankfein. It's happened to lots of other companies. And, you know, to be fair, the jury is out whether companies that do this actually run better or whether it just makes shareholders feel better. But J.P. Morgan has felt particularly beleaguered because they feel like their stock price has been great. They've given shareholders the returns that they want. They've made them a lot of money. Why are you trying to take power away from the CEO? So in order to, counteract this, what they've done is start a huge lobbying push. And then this part, which really is, you know, feels pretty dodgy, is that as they're lobbying shareholders to say, you know, keep our chairman and our CEO titles together, they're not allowing other people to see what the vote totals are like as they go along. So we're only going to find out next week, the shareholder meetings on Tuesday, you know, what the end result is. But it's very valuable to know how successful they're being over the next few days, because then, you know, opponents can kick in more effort, or, you know, people who are for Jamie Dimon can kick in more effort. But this way, it's basically the House always wins. Only the House, you know, in the gambling sense, only the House can see what the vote tally is. And that really puts opponents at a disadvantage. And don't forget, these opponents are the people who own J.P. Morgan shares.
Including a lot of big pension funds. New York State Pension Fund, I think, has a stake in this and has been vocal, and a lot of others that really spread a lot of risk and benefit to a lot of the people in the population. All right, next issue. Bloomberg News has admitted to giving its reporters access to a lot of private information that banks and others entered on their Bloomberg finance terminals. They have managed to get J.P. Morgan and Goldman Sachs and the Bank of England and the U.S. Federal Reserve, among others, all furious at them for violating people's privacy. What exactly did Bloomberg News do?
Well, Bloomberg is kind of, you know, so Bloomberg has these things called terminals, and they sell them to financial companies for $20,000 a year or so. And the terminal is a computer, and it looks like one of those old MS-DOS PCs. It's a black screen with lots of data, and you enter obscure commands to find out what's happening in the stock market. But it's also kind of like Facebook for Wall Street. So you can see, for everyone who has a Bloomberg terminal, you can see, just as you can on Facebook or if you have Gmail on GChat, you can see who's logged in, who's active, and so on, if you're any kind of user. What the Bloomberg reporters could also see was not only whether somebody was logged in, but they could see that person's personal contact information and their chats with sales representatives at Bloomberg, which, you know, presumably would tell them, you know, what kind of troubles they were having with functions and what they were looking for. They could also see not specific, you know, trades or searches, but they could see kind of, you know, aggregate which functions on the Bloomberg terminal the person used most. You know, were they looking up mergers most, or, you know, were they looking up stocks most, or, you know, things like that. And those things are, you know, so obviously the financial industry, which ironically spends almost all of its money looking for data like this and carving up data on its clients and trying to find out what its clients are doing. The financial industry objected to this, saying this is more information than reporters should really have. And, you know, that's kind of the scandal, but we'll see where it goes. You know, allegedly, you know, the Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations, somebody on that subcommittee suggested that, you know, they might want to look at this. But really, you know, on Wall Street, a lot of traders don't care because they know that the Bloomberg machine is like Facebook. And so these reporters were using it like Facebook to see if somebody was there, you know, and try to reach them that way through that chat method.
Bloomberg, the terminal, is the thing that made Bloomberg the man so rich. It sounds like this is more of a theoretical threat, you think? Nobody's really getting hurt by this financially or otherwise, but just no one likes a breach of privacy?
Yes, exactly. I mean, especially because, you know, the Bloomberg customers are actually paying for this. So, you know, Facebook can at least tell you that, you know, it's collecting your information because you're not paying for it. So what you're selling them is your information. But, you know, the Bloomberg customers are actually paying for it. So on that principle, you know, some of them might object. But really, it's more often the, you know, the public relations arms of these banks. The traders themselves are too busy using the actual Bloomberg to worry about it. And as a reporter, the kind of information you could get using you know, what you could see on a Bloomberg terminal wasn't really useful. At most, you could maybe get, you know, stories on whether somebody was leaving a firm, you know, people moves. But, you're not going to get Pulitzer Prize-winning stories or award-winning stories, which Bloomberg has also gotten. So, you know, so the value of the information is very low, but I think you're right. It's, you know, it's really the principle. They don't want reporters having any more access than possible. A lot of these banks spend millions of dollars a year preventing the press from getting information, and so... You know, it's one more front on that battle.
All right. So even while people obsess on the public sector scandals, the private sector scandals roll on. And we thank Heidi Moore, business and finance editor for The Guardian USA, for continuing to pay attention. Heidi, thanks a lot.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we continue our series on the legalization of marijuana in parts of the U.S. Today, the science behind medical and recreational marijuana. Stay with us.